Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Jai Shri Prabhupada. So we're reading from Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Volume 6. Chapter 6, text 155 to 157. So we'll chant this text 155 together, and then just chant the other ones. Yaya Chaitragya Shakti Sa Veshtita Nripa Sarvada Samsara Tapam Akilam Avapnoti Atra Santatam Yaya Chitragya Shakti Sa Veshtita Nripa Sarvada Samsara tappana kilam. Avapnotyatra santatam. Yaya chetragya shakti sa. Veshtitam ripasarvaga. Samsara tappana kilam. Avapnotyatra santatam. Yaya chetragya shakti sa. Veshtitam ripasarvaga. Samsara tapana kilam. Avapnot yatra santatam. Yaya chetragya shakti sa. Veshtitam ripasarvaga. Samsara tapana kilam. Avapnot yatra santatam. Ladies.
Yaya chetragya shakti sa.
Veshtitam ripasarvaga. Samsara tapana kilam. Avapnot yatra santatam. Yaya chetragya shakti sa. Veshtitam ripasarvaga. Samsara tapana kilam. Avapnot yatra santatam. Yaya. By which? Chetragya shakti. The living entities known as the Chetragya potency. Sa. That potency. Veshtita. Covered. Nripa. O king. Sarvaga, capable of going anywhere in the spiritual or material worlds. Samsara tapan, misery is due to the cycle of repeated birth and death. Akilan, all kinds of. Avapnoti, obtains. Atra, in this material world. Santatan, arising from suffering or enjoying various kinds of reactions to furtive activities. Translation. O King, the Chetragya Shakti is the living entity. Although he has the facility to live in either the material or the spiritual world, he suffers the threefold miseries of material existence because he is influenced by the avidya, nescience potency, which covers his constitutional position. Text 156. Taya tirohitat vachcha shakti chetragya sangita sarvabhuteshu bhupala Tarattam yena vartate. Translation. This living entity, covered by the influence of nescience, exists in different forms in the material condition. O king, he is thus proportionately freed from the influence of material energy to a greater or lesser degree. Purport. The material energy acts on the living entity in different degrees according to how he acquires the association of the three modes of material nature. There are 8,400,000 species of life, some inferior, some superior, and some mediocre. The gradations of the bodies are calculated according to the covering of the material energy. In the lower categories, including aquatics, trees, plants, insects, birds, and so forth, Spiritual consciousness is almost non-existent. In the mediocre category, the human form of life, spiritual consciousness is comparatively awakened. In the superior life forms, spiritual consciousness is fully awakened. Then the living entity understands his real position and tries to escape the influence of material energy by developing Krishna consciousness. So, text 157. Hladini sandini samvit tvayeka sarvasanshraye hlada tapa kari mishra tvayino gunavarjite. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. This means that he originally has three potencies: the pleasure potency, the potency of eternality, and the potency of knowledge. Together, these are called the chit potency, and they are present in full in the Supreme Lord. For the living entities who are part and parcel of the Lord, the pleasure potency in the material world is sometimes displeasing and sometimes mixed. This is not the case with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is not under the influence of the material energy or its modes. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna. So the first, these three verses are quoted from the Vishnu Purana, and the intention of Lord Chaitanya is to enlighten Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And there are further explanation of the three major potencies of the Lord. So this potency, material potency, the marginal potency, and the spiritual potency. These are the three basic things. And the description of the spiritual energy as Satchidananda and Vigraha, the form. So it's important to understand with this pastime of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the incarnation of Brihaspati. And in the period of he who was the priest of the demigods, Brihaspati, and in his life, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had mastered all the systems of philosophy that were current at that time. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 22, text 62, it described about Prithu Maharaj, Brihaspatir Brahmavade, that Brihaspati, the priest of the heavenly planets, in the matter of spiritual understanding, Atmavatve in the matter of self-control, that in his personal behavior, Prithu Maharaj exhibited all good qualities, and in spiritual knowledge, he was exactly like Brihaspati. When Lord Chaitanya talked to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord honored him as the incarnation of Brihaspati, and as such, this is a follower of Brahmavad or Mayavad. And Brihaspati is also a great logician. So it appears that Maharaj Prithu, although he was a great devotee constantly engaged in the service of the Lord, he was able to defeat all kinds of impersonalists and Mayavadis by his profound knowledge of the Vedic scriptures. And so Prabhupada mentions in this purport that we should learn from Maharaj Prithu that a Vaishnava or devotee must not only be fixed in the service of the Lord, but if required, must be prepared to argue with impersonalist Mayavadis, with all logic and philosophy, and defeat their contention that the Absolute is impersonal. So, the different philosophical systems, they're regarded as six philosophical systems. And so when the sages at Naimisharanya, they appointed Suta Goswami to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the reasons given was because, and this is in the verse 117, he knew all the sages, including Vyasadeva, and he knew all their different philosophies. And so therefore, he was qualified to address the devotees that were assembled there. And the purport of 117, and I'll just read it, paraphrase it quickly, that besides Vyasadeva, the other sages who are the authors of six different philosophical systems, namely Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali, Jaimini, and Ashtavakra, and these are the different philosophical systems that are basically Mayavad atheist systems of philosophy. And theism is explained completely in Vedanta Sutra, whereas in these other systems, there's virtually no mention given to the ultimate cause of all causes. So Prabhupada also says, here's a very heavy thing, one can sit on the Vyasa Sangha only after being conversant in all systems of philosophy, so that one can present fully the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all the other systems. This is a very heavy qualification to sit on the Vyasa Sangha. However, there is understanding of these philosophies within all of Srila Prabhupada's writings. Anyone who scrutinizingly studies Srila Prabhupada's purports and all the scriptures that he's translated and written will be able to easily defeat all these systems of philosophy, as they're very well explained and well defeated. Now, the basic starting point for all these systems of philosophy is that the material world is a place of misery and suffering, and therefore the goal of all, of any bona fide, or I wouldn't say bona fide, but any philosophical system has to provide liberation from the material energy. That's the basis from which they start out. And they accept the concepts of the Vedas. They accept, for example, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, these four properties, as being the necessary functions of the human condition. And human beings have to seek perfection by using one of these systems of philosophy to gain perfection over these four functions of human life. So the systems, they're all composed of sutras. Sutras, the translation means code, and another meaning of the word sutra means thread. Just as we read in Bhagavad Gita, sutra manigana eva, that the Supreme Lord, everything rests on me, Krishna says, just as pearls are strung upon a thread. So when you see the string of pearls, you don't see the thread, you only see the pearls. But you know that connecting all these pearls together is the thread underlying the necklace. So in the same way, these sutras, they are considered threads. And the qualifications of these sutras is that a sutra has to be composed in perfect Sanskrit, and it must convey many meanings. So it has to be very concise, very short, and explain many different things. And so to become expert in one or any of these systems, You have to have a guru who knows the system so that he can explain to you which meaning applies to which question that you're asking. So, and in this way, you have to understand reality, the reality of your situation. So, if we look at these, the first two systems are called Nyaya and Vaisheshika. They're basically systems that examine the evidence. This is the real atom. But in Brahma Samhita, we know that within the atom, there is the Supersoul. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. So he is present in his fullness, it says. This is the translation of this Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. That the Supersoul is present in fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time. So in one sense you can say, yes, they had a good idea with this atom, but they did not follow it through to the transcendental conclusion. And why? Because they're lacking the last line of the shloka, which is Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, that because they're not worshipping Govinda, because they have no devotion, Bhakti Mama Mijanati, that without worship of Krishna, without devotional service to Krishna, one cannot understand in truth the reality. So next of these philosophies is the atheistic Sankhya philosophy. And more or less, this tries to explain the material energy as composed of Purusha and Prakriti. And it delineates the difference between conscious and unconscious, the individual souls and the unconscious material energy, without reference to God. He's not saying there's a God, he's just saying there's these living entities, they are Purusha, and they are moving these atoms that Kanada and Gautama, the Nyayas, Nayis, and the Vaisheshikas, saying that this Purusha is moving the atoms. And in the third canto, of course, Lord Kapila, he gives the theistic version of this Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya means actually to count. There's a counting, and they count the various things. And so Sankhya, Lord Kapila's Sankhya, Devavuti Kapila's Sankhya, he's explaining from internal consciousness the different elements of the material and spiritual world. So you have the earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. You have the working senses. You have the knowledge-acquiring senses, and so on. And then finally, you have the super soul, the transcendent reality, and this is then the theistic Sankhya philosophy. So then the next philosopher is Patanjali, and Patanjali is famous for the yoga system, and especially the Ashtanga yoga system, the Eightfold Mystic Path. And so this begins with Yama Niyama, Asana, and Pranayama. So Yama Niyama means the rules and regulations, what you should do, what you should not do. And then Asana, we all know this is the sitting postures and the different exercises and so on. And these are to gain mastery through Pranayama, which is the breathing exercises, which controls the different life airs. There are five different life airs, and if you control these life airs and you bring them to equilibrium and you bring them to perfect harmony, then you actually become liberated. And then, so these, the first four of these systems, Yama Niyama, Asana, and Pranayama, these are what are also called in the present day Hatha Yoga, because they are physical. They're external to the, one can actually see that, oh, this person is practicing asana, this person is practicing yama niyama, and so on. But then there's an internal part of this called pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, and samadhi. And pratyahara means to withdraw the senses from the sense objects. And so this also, one can see that this is also visible externally, that one is withdrawing his senses from the sense objects. And then dhyana means that he takes one particular shloka or one word or one concept and he thinks about that concept all the time, and that becomes, that leads into meditation, which is the next phase. And then, so then when his meditation is complete, his meditation, he can take any form that he likes, any form of God or whatever, until he attains samadhi, then he throws out God and he becomes perfect. He merges into the Brahman, like that. And so that is the way he escapes from this material energy. And that is how he overcomes the misery of the material world. So the next is the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, in which you master the various rituals of the Vedas in order to attain mastery over the forces of nature. Their basic idea is that you don't need God. You just need to follow these prescriptions of the Vedas, the different Karma Kanda or Jnana Kanda sections of the Vedas. You just do the rituals, and because you do the ritual, then you'll get the result. Actually, it's stated there in the Veda. If you worship this demigod, then you get this result. You worship that demigod, you get a different result. So if you practice this worship, you become expert in all these kinds of worship, then you attain your desires. Your desires will be fulfilled, and then you'll be happy, and then you'll overcome the material miseries. So this there are different arguments that they use, and actually Krishna uses some of these arguments with Arjuna to tell him, yes, you should just fight, because actually these things are just atoms and you're the soul and these people are souls, and then when you kill them it doesn't matter. So if there are souls, then it doesn't matter that you just kill the atoms, and they'll get liberation, they'll go to the heavenly planets. And if they don't have souls, then they're just atoms anyway, and it doesn't matter anyway. So Krishna uses this kind of argument with Arjuna. And he also uses this argument in the Govardhan Lila, famous Govardhan Hill, where he explains to Nanda Maharaj, no, you don't have to worship Indra, you just do the right thing, and then you get the right result. That's all. And you don't need to engage in this rituals. So, finally, we have Vedanta. And Vedanta has actually the Vedanta of Srila Vyasadeva, Vedanta Sutra, has in the modern time largely been hijacked by the Mayavadis due to Shankaracharya's Shariraka Bhashya. So this impersonal view, and he even corrects his to screw the impersonal meaning out of the Vedantas, even he will correct the what he considers the mistakes that Srila Vyasadeva has made. And therefore, and that way can come to his conclusion. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that shloka, mamaivam so jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatana. So this shloka explains that mama eva angsha, angsha means a part, and that the living entities, the jivas, they are my parts and my parcels. They are part of me, and they are eternally part of me. So how they can be eternal if they dissolve into by merging into Brahman. It is illogical. And so similarly, in the common Mayavad commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, they have a great difficulty with this verse. So then, so these are the basic understanding of the different schools of philosophy. And after Shankaracharya, there was a reaction by the Vaishnavas, and four sampradayas were established. That we know these four sampradayas, the Sri Sampradaya, the Sampradaya of the Shiva Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, the Brahma Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya. So these four sampradayas were established, and they each made a commentary on Vedanta Sutra in order to establish their philosophy and their thinking of personalism. They created their commentaries, and from these commentaries, these sampradayas, they exist. So, now, not only do these systems, not only does Vedanta Sutra have these Vaishnava commentaries, but all the systems of philosophy have different commentaries. So in order to become expert in those, in these systems, first, you have to study Sanskrit. You have to, as he said, you have to break your head studying Sanskrit for 12 years, and then you have to find a guru who can then teach you the different meanings of the philosophies. So the whole endeavor becomes very problematic. As we say in America, it's not for the regular Joe. It's not for your average person in the street. So this cuts out a lot of people. I mean, even Arjuna, who had a lot more going for him than most people in this present age, he rejected the yoga that Krishna presented, these different systems of yoga. He said, I can't do this. He said, controlling the mind is more difficult than to control the wind. So please show me some other method. And now we come to the situation of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in this verse. And 500 years ago, in these places like Navadvip and Jagannath Puri, the caste system was still very much in force in India, and the Brahminical class were very prominent, and their schools were led by people like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, Keshava Kashmiri, these great intellects, these great minds. They were the heads of the Brahminical class. And this was not just a question of scholarship, but it was also a question of political and social power within the society itself. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not just like a university professor somewhere out there. He was the main advisor to the king, Prataparudra, born in a Brahmin family. And then you had to become very scholarly, very learned, and so on. So he was a little bit worried for Lord Chaitanya, because here's this person who is the culmination of the Varnashram order at the time, and this his display of chanting and dancing didn't make sense for someone in this elevated kind of position. He didn't seem to be aware that Lord Chaitanya was a great scholar. He didn't seem to be, but he just saw this kind of bizarre behavior, and he thought, well, you know, I have to correct this. This young man has somehow become deluded, And so I have to correct him. So that's how this whole pastime comes about. And he's a beautiful person, and he's obviously very spiritually inclined, but somehow he's fallen off the wagon. You know, he just doesn't have the right stuff, you know. And so this is how this pastime begins. Now, this leads into a history a little bit of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. There's Lord Chaitanya, he defeats Sarvabhauma, and Sarvabhauma surrenders to him. And similarly, when Lord Chaitanya goes to Varanasi, he preaches to the Mayavadis, and so Prakashananda Saraswati surrenders to him, and then Lord Chaitanya establishes, the six Goswamis are established in Vrindavan, and they become, through their scholarship, the leading lights of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And they set up what seems to be a fifth sampradaya, because the Gaudiyas, they are just seeing that Lord Chaitanya is our founder, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we are a bona fide sampradaya like that. So this leads 200 years later to the pastime of Baladeva Vidyabhushan, because the situation was very interesting. Just after the rise of Aurangzeb, the Mughal emperor, he caused great destruction to the various temples and the Hindu shrines, and he desecrated the Govindaji temple. And so the Brahmins, the devotees who were the devotees of Govinda, they moved the deity to other places. And finally, the deity was moved after the fall of Aurangzeb, the death of Aurangzeb, the deity was moved to Jaipur, close to Jaipur, to Govindapur, which is on the outskirts of what is now Jaipur. And the king there, Jai Singh II, he was a very famous king, and he was the king who actually built the city of Jaipur. He laid it out according to Sherpa Shastra, and so he created what we now know as the modern city of Jaipur. And his fort was up on the hill, it was called Amber, the Amber Fort, and this was where he had his capital and so on. And he was a great scholar, and he set up many observatories. There are five or six of them in Ujjain, in Jaipur, in Delhi, I think Nasik, I'm not sure. Anyway, there are five or six of these observatories for studying astrology and astronomy at the time. It was a very advanced soul, and he was also a great devotee of Govinda, the deity. And this caused some political problem in his kingdom, because for the previous generations, for his father and six generations previously, there was this a group of Ramanuja, followers of Ramanujacharya, who had converted, you might say, his forebears to the Ramanandi philosophy. And so they were devotees of Sitaram. And so the Ramanandis became the court advisors to the king of Jaipur, to the king of Amber. And so these when they saw that King Jai Singh II had become a devotee of Govinda, they became very worried about their material position, that if we don't kind of like dissociate him, the king, from these Gaudiyas, then we'll lose our position, we'll lose our status, we'll lose our power. So they created a court case to the king, They said, you can't have these Gaudiyas doing what they're doing. They're not bona fide. They don't have a proper parampara. They don't have a proper sampradaya. And they're just interlopers. And they have this weird form of worship of Radha and Krishna together. And Radha and Krishna are not married, so this is very scandalous. And so they can worship Radharani separately, and they can worship Krishna separately, but together is not verboten. It's like we have Sitaram and we have Lakshmi Narayan, because they're properly married, and therefore this is the bona fide way to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Shakti thing. So this became a thing. And they also said that the Gaudiyas, they don't worship Narayan properly, because when you begin your worship, you worship Narayan, then you worship all the other demigods or whatever, and they don't worship Narayan, so therefore they're not bona fide. So this difficulty, this court case, was presented to the king. So the king, he was very favorable to the Vaishnavas, but he said, look, you have to explain yourselves and explain your sampradaya and explain, why you worship in this way, in a proper way. And so he studied, this king, he studied all the different Upanishads and the systems of philosophy in order to, that he would be the judge then of this court case. So the Vaishnavas were very perturbed, and so they sent to Vishwanath Chakravarti, who was in Vrindavan at the time, and they said, well, look, we have this problem that the Ramanandis, they're coming after us, and this will not be good. So at that time, Baladeva Vidyabhushan was associating with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Vishwanath was very old. He deputed Baladev to go in his place. So Baladev's story is interesting, that he was born in Orissa, and he went to the Gurukul in Raymuna, and then once he graduated from the Gurukula, he went looking for a proper sampradaya, looking for God, looking to find a guru. And so at one point he was in Mysore, and in Mysore he met the Madhvas. And so he studied Vedanta Sutra under the Madhvas, and he became very expert. He was initiated into the Madhva Sampradaya by the Madhvas in Mysore. And then after that, he went on his journeys, and he came to Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, he met the devotees of the Lord Chaitanya. He met the different devotees, and they discussed philosophy. And the devotees actually convinced him of Lord Chaitanya's being the personality of Godhead, and they convinced him of so many things. And so he couldn't be reinitiated, because he was already initiated by a bona fide sampradaya, but he surrendered and he took shiksha from the Gaudiyas at that time. And then he went to Navadvip, and then from Navadvip he was referred to Vishwanath Chakravarti. So this is how, this was his history. He was very brilliant and young man. And so he was sent to Jaipur to argue the Gaudiya Vaishnav case. So he argued, well, our sampradaya, you say there are four sampradayas, and they are all resident in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya has come and he has resided in Jagannath Puri, and he is the culmination of all four of these sampradayas. That is the actual purport of Lord Chaitanya's mission. And the Ramanandis, they wouldn't accept this, because they said, this is not in the Shastra, and therefore we don't accept. So And another grounds for not accepting was, you do not have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So Baladev was very bold, and he said, yes, we do have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. They said, oh, this was a big surprise for them. And they said, so you can produce, so bring us the commentary. So he said, well, I can bring it to you, but the thing is, I have to write it first, you know. So this was, as you can imagine, mind-blowing for everybody. Everybody there, except for Baladev. And so the king said, well, all right, you can write it, and you bring it, and then I'll make the judgment, and then we'll discuss your commentary, and we'll see. So Baladev went to speak to the deity Govindaji, and basically said to him, look, you got me into this, now you've got to get me out of this. You have to help me write this commentary. And the one story is that he wrote within 1 week the commentary, and then another story is that, well, within a month, within a short time, short enough space of time, he wrote this commentary, which he entitled the Govinda Bhasya. And so Prabhupada has dedicated his Bhagavad Gita as it is to Baladev Vidyabhushan as this commentary, the Govinda Bhasya. And he mentions this Govinda Bhasya commentary in his dedication. And so this commentary was able to establish the primacy of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which brings together all the other Vaishnava philosophies in a very practical and very obvious way. So the king was satisfied with this, and the Ramanandis were defeated. I'm not sure what happened politically after that in the kingdom, but anyway, at one point when King Jai Singh, he created the city of Jaipur. And now the Govindaji is worshipped. Actually, when there's a sidebar, that when Vishwanath Chakravarti was told that, oh, they've separated the deities, that the king told them that according to the Ramanandis, Radha and Krishna couldn't be worshipped separately, they had to be worshipped in separate rooms. So when Vishwanath was told this, he said, ah, they're having a lover's quarrel. She's mad with him. So she's gone, gone away from him like that. And so it's a nice realization. And so this is the story of Baladev, the story of the Vedanta Sutra. And we can be sure that there's a very nice, also further on in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the 25th chapter of the Madhya Lila, verse 50 to 57, where in the arguments of Prakashananda Saraswati, there's a purport in there of verse 56, in which Prabhupada has summarized Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, in which he explains, gives a very nice, short, quick explanation of all the systems of the various schools of philosophy, and the defeat, and how to defeat them, and where their flaws are, and how they can be overcome in argument. So we need not worry too much about the purport of 117, where it says that if you have to be able to know and defeat all the systems of philosophy in order to sit on the Vyasasana, because simply by the study of Srila Prabhupada's books and the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that one will be empowered and one will be enlightened as to the various systems of philosophy. So I had a lot of fun preparing for this class because it was very wonderful. There's the article on Balabhai Vidyabhushan is in Back to Godhead magazine. If you have the Veda base, you just have to type in Ramanandi in the Back to Godhead section. And then there's a very beautiful explanation of that. So, Prabhu? Yeah.
Where did you say the arguments
were? That's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Madhya Lila, chapter 25, and it's text 50 to 57. And the 57th shloka is Tarko Pratishta, and the Mahajana. That one has to follow the example of the Mahajans. Jai. So, Nibal, Prabhu?
Yeah, I was asked, Radha Krishna's are not married, so why are you worshipping? Take some charanam. So then, we asked, that, have you seen, you follow Lakshmi Narayan? He said, yes. Have you seen them get married? He said, no. So then why are you worshipping them? You are forbidding Radha Krishna together, but you haven't seen married of Lakshmi Narayan, but you are worshipping them, but you don't allow us to worship them.
Uh-huh.
So they could not. Then they, he brought the reference of Draupadi's, the 16,108 queens approach to the Draupadi. That you have a five husband you're controlling and we have a one husband of 16,000, we cannot. So in that discussion, what was established? The position of Srimati Radhika. So he narrated the whole thing. Do you understand the position of Swarup Shakti? He asked. Then he quoted this, similar to actually this chapter, the Tattagata, the Lord Krishna is the origin and then how he has a one Shakti who has a unlimited manifestation and known by unlimited names, but is one Shakti.
Yeah.
But that one Shakti has a three manifestation, chit potency like Prabhupada says, and then minute aspect called marginal potency and shadow aspect called maya potency. Then each of them has a inheritance, three nature, that's Satchit Ananda. And Prabhupada translated over there is intact, this such in the intact. So he broke down the whole thing. As a result, Ramanandi, they actually wanted to take shelter of Baladev Vidyabhushan.
Yes.
And they completely, like, never heard such explanation. But Baladev Vidyabhushan knew the etiquette. He said, no, no, you don't need to take shelter of me. You already are bona fide.
Yes.
But you can be trained in this Gauriya Shiksha.
Uh-huh.
So it was the greatest victory.
Yes.
It was the greatest victory that Mahaprabhu's teaching, Prabhupada's teaching, stands above every other Sampradaya's teaching, even though they are bona fide.
Yeah. And the other point that we were discussing the other day is that these systems of Nyaya and Vaisheshika and so on, these are basically Jnana Yoga. They're a kind of Jnana Yoga. And one never sees that a Jnana Yogi or the other yogis, one never sees that one who is perfect in bhakti yoga will then become a jnana yogi. One never sees this in the shastra anywhere, because and this is the in one sense the proof that bhakti yoga is actually the highest, is the culmination of the other forms of yoga and mystic yoga, jnana yoga, and so on. And so therefore, we can be confident about bhakti yoga because in many cases, bhakti yoga is disparaged as being for less intelligent people but when you see these philosophies and when you see the philosophy of Baladev Vidyabhushan, the explanations, you cannot accept. And the six Goswamis also. That's why they didn't need a commentary. In the time of Lord Chaitanya, in the time of the six Goswamis and Krishnadas Kaviraj, there was no need for commentary because there was so much expert and so far in advance. Even it says Jiva Goswami is the greatest philosopher practically of all time. Till today. So they never saw the need for a commentary. But Krishna made this arrangement just so that this could happen. This Govinda Bhasya. So it's a wonderful pastime. Wonderful. Jai Prabhu. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.